All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are breaking down the defensive linemen, these interior guys, D tackles, a couple of big defensive ends in our continuing series looking at the Falcons training camp storylines and position battles.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, guys, I am Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest running Falcon websites on the internet, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. Today, we're talking about the Falcons interior defensive linemen. We're removing the edge players from this group. We will talk about them next week, but we will be talking quite a bit about the D tackles, and we'll also be including guys like Derek Shelby and Jacob Tuodi Mariner, just because while they do play defensive end for the Falcons, they will also potentially play some interior defensive tackle, particularly in the nickel sub package. So technically, they might qualify more as a interior defensive lineman than a true edge. So we'll be talking about those guys today. Now let's get into it. And I do want to say up front, guys, just to better explain where my headspace is at, this episode and probably the Edge episode, I probably won't be as high on the Falcons front as probably, or at least from what I've seen other people this offseason seem to be. I really do think the Falcons pass rush is going to hold the key to this defense making a big leap this season, that big leap that I think everybody is hoping and expecting the Falcons to make. And I'm a little bit more skeptical that they're going to make that leap, largely due to my concern over the losses of Adrian Claiborne and Dontari Poe this offseason. And I feel like while both of those players weren't completely irreplaceable, I think you can make a very good argument that the Falcons didn't necessarily do a great job replacing those guys. And I think they're sort of relying on some of those young guys, particularly Grady Jarrett and Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley, to make pretty big leaps this year to sort of fill that void. And I am not as high, and we'll particularly when we talk about the edge guys, I'm not as optimistic that those guys are going to be able to fill that void. And I think, you know, you look at last year's defensive line, you know, both Claiborne and Poe were core parts of it. Poe certainly was a contributor. We had, all of us had really high expectations of him coming into last season, including myself. You know, I don't think he lived up to those extremely high expectations. And I think that caused a lot of people to be like, oh, he, you know, to underrate him and to be like, oh, he wasn't that good and whatnot. I don't think he was amazing, but I think he was still a very good player for the Falcons. I think, you know, we saw Claiborne spend the bulk of his time being an edge rusher last year, in part due to the sort of development of Tack. And I think had the Falcons retained Claiborne this season, we would have seen him kick more inside and be that guy that lines up next to Grady Jarrett in passing downs while Tack takeovers more of the responsibility on the outside. And now we have Jack Crawford basically being asked to fill that void. And, you know, we lost Poe, and now it seems like Terrell McClain is being asked to fill that void. And, you know, call me crazy, but I'm not as like thinking, oh yeah, the Falcons won't miss, you know, Poe and Claiborne versus McClain and Crawford. You know, I feel like that has the potential to be a really significant loss in regards. And I think that's going to be one of the big questions I have with this unit and the edge group moving forward this season. And you know, one of the things that hoping we get to see answered in training camp is maybe, you know, that sort of concern is not nearly as big as, you know, sitting here in early July, my perception of it is. And so that's going to be one of the big storylines to see of these guys, besides Grady Jarrett, who's going to step up and be a regular contributor on the defensive line this year. And we'll see the beginnings of that in training camp. You know, I think the first big question that we need to answer for this upcoming season is how good the pass rush is going to be. And we know, Grady Jarrett's going to be the lead dog as far as this interior D lineman group goes. We know he's really good already. I personally think he can get significantly better. And this is something we discussed on a previous episode, I think last month, where we devoted about half of that episode to talking about Grady Jarrett. And I think one of the things I said in that episode was there was a couple of games towards the end of last year, particularly Tampa Bay and Minnesota, where I was hoping and wanting Grady Jarrett to really dominate those games. I don't think he did. And I feel like there's going to be a couple of games this year. You know, you look at some of these opponents that have some questionable interior offensive line play, like Cincinnati and Green Bay and the Giants. And I want to see him dominate those games. But at the same time, when he's going to face a number of really high caliber guards this year, and if he's in the nickel playing that left defensive tackle spot that he normally played last year, you know, you're going to see a lot of instances where he's going up against the opposing team's right guard. And you look at some of the right guards he's going to be facing this year. You look at guys like Ali Marpet, David DeCastro, Zach Martin, Trey Turner, Justin Pugh, Brandon Brooks, Brandon Scherff, Kevin Zeitler, Marshall Yanda. You know, I probably just named at least three, if not five, of the top five right guards in the NFL in that group. And I guess with my question for Grady Jarrett is, are we going to look back at the end of the season and look at those guys like Pro Football Focus grades and be like, oh, that guy's worst or one of his worst games this year came against the Falcons, thanks largely to Grady Jarrett? Is he going to be the type of guy that is going to take on these, you know, so-called elite or near elite right guards and really give them fits? We've seen him do that from time to time. We saw him do that a little bit with Zach Martin, particularly early in that Cowboys game last year. And we've seen him do that with other guys, but then there's been other games where he's been relatively quiet. And so that to me is really the big question with Grady J. Is he going to be that consistent high level force where he is now unequivocally seen as one of the premier D tackles in the league? And I think he can get there. You know, we'll talk about this later with the edge group. I feel a lot more confident that Grady Jarrett can and would make that leap than the edge guys can or will. So, you know, I've got more questions about Tack and Vic than I do with Grady Jarrett at this point. I think, you know, teaming up with Grady Jarrett on that pass rush primarily as the sub-package nickel guy, as I said at the top, is probably going to be Jack Crawford. I think we saw flashes of what Jack Crawford's potential could be, you know, during last year's training camp and early in the season. But you wonder, you know, but then he got hurt and you wonder if he's going to have a much more expanded role this year and a much more important role, basically, as the Adrian Claiborne replacement. Will he be able to step up in that role? And, you know, when you look at his body of work in Dallas, you're not going to come away overly impressed. And I think that was one of the reasons why when the Falcons signed Jack Crawford, people weren't like, you know, gushing over that signing. And it really wasn't until he's like, oh, you know, the training camp where it was like, oh, Jack Crawford does have a little bit of juice to him. But, you know, I think part of the issue was due to the strength of the Falcons defensive line last year with guys like Poe and Claiborne and eventually Ataba Rubin. Once he got hurt, you didn't feel like that was a huge loss. And this year, you know, obviously you don't have that sort of cushion where, you know, last year, what, Jack Crawford was probably like the seventh guy in the rotation or something like that. And now he's going to be arguably the third guy in the rotation in terms of snaps this year. So that's a big jump up. So we'll see how it goes with him. You know, I think looking at the matchups, similar to what we saw with Grady Jarrett, I just outlined, you know, the good thing is when you look at the Falcons opponents this year, only about five of them, you would probably say their team's left guard, assuming that you know, that's where Jack Crawford lines up this year on the right side of the D line, where he'll be facing the left guard more often than not. Only about five of the Falcons' opponents this year is where the left guard is the better of the two guards currently projected to start for those teams. And so I think, you know, that being said, I think that means that the good thing for Jack Crawford is most weeks he should be facing, you know, the lesser competition between himself and Grady Jarrett. And so that should give him some opportunities to play at a decently high level. You know, I could certainly imagine a scenario where, you know, my expectation for like peak Jack Crawford in 2018 is sort of like if you go back and look at Carl Klug in Tennessee in past years where, you know, I think as a rookie he had like 7 sacks, but generally like Klug was like a 3 to 5 sack guy, you know, in some of his better seasons in Tennessee as a sort of situational pass rusher. But then I think there's also a possibility where Jack Crawford could be like this Ziggy Hood type of player, which is not particularly good player. You know, it was baffling when I went back to watch Terrell McClain with Washington last year and watching Ziggy Hood play. And I'm like, oh, my God, they cut Terrell McClain and not Ziggy Hood. Ugh, that's a terrible decision. But and speaking of Terrell McClain, we will talk about him in just a second. You know, I don't have much else to say about the pass. Oh, I guess I should mention Derek Shelby. I do think we'll see Derek Shelby dabble as an interior rusher this season, which he has done. He did last year when the Falcons needed guys to have a breather or guys were a little nicked up. You know, we saw a lot of him early on in that 2016, I guess. Sorry, guys. I told you guys, whenever I have to use numbers and it's not written down in front of me, I can't use them when I'm doing these podcasts. Again, it's two halves of my brain. 2016, yeah. And so, like, Derek Shelby hasn't been this huge difference maker when he's gotten opportunities as an interior pass rusher. And I think in that way, he's sort of not quite lived up to expectations when the Falcons signed him, but I do think he's made major contributions against the run when he's played D-end, particularly last season. And that was something that we talked about early on in 2016 before he got injured. It was like, why is he being used as this interior pass rusher when his real strength is being a run defender on the outside? And eventually Dan Quinn and company figured it out. But, you know, I'm not expecting Shelby to make major contributions, but I should at least mention him as far as what he can do as a pass rusher. Obviously, the bulk of his value is going to come as that five technique, that strong side defensive end spot in the base defense. And now I can make my segue. Speaking of the base defense, we will talk about Terrell McClain and Shelby and Deidre Sinnott and their potential to impact that base defense in just a bit. But of course, I want to plug LockedOnSports.com, the one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, when you can find podcasts and written content dealing with the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball sides of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So my other big question that I have entering the season is going to be, and probably the bigger question, well, it's probably not in terms of impact. Obviously, pass rush matters a little bit more in a passing league. But the one where I have a much, you know, at least with the pass rush, we still have Grady Jarrett. So I feel reasonably confident that the pass rush will be decent. But the run defense is a much bigger question, at least as far as that's concerned, because so much of it's going to be dealing with newcomers like Terrell McClain and Deidre Sinnott, particularly at the D-tackle position. Obviously, Derek Shelby brings some continuity to that strong side defensive end spot. But, you know, looking back last year, one of the big improvements the Falcons made a year ago was in the red zone defense. And that was an area where I thought Poe would have the potential to really impact the Falcons. You know, you look at their red zone conversion rate allowed in 2016, they were dead last in the NFL that year. Then you look at last year, they jumped in the top five. They were fifth, I think, if you're looking at the regular season. But then when you factor in include the postseason, they had the second best red zone defense in the league last year. And obviously, there's a little bit of a confirmation bias in my regard as that applies to Poe, but I do think it's not a coincidence that you bring in Poe and all of a sudden you see a big spike in your red zone defense. Obviously, there were other contributors to that, including guys like Shelby and Reed and Jarrett, as well as other players on the back seven as well. But it's like to me, one of the things watching the film in 2016 that seemed to be less of an issue in 2017 was it seemed like any time a team got inside the 5 or 10 yard line against us in 2016 and ran the ball, they were going to score. And if they didn't score, they got the ball down to the 1 yard line and then scored on the very next play. You know, it didn't seem like that was as big an issue in 2017. I think a lot of that is due to the inability for teams to just basically push Poe out of the way in those situations. You can look at the numbers. The numbers seem to back this up a little bit to a certain extent. When you look at the percentage of touchdowns run inside the 10-yard line, in 2016, the Falcons were the 30th best defense or the third worst defense in the league in giving up those touchdowns on those runs. Last year, they moved up to 19th. So, you know, they were about slightly below average from a league standard, but, you know, going from 30 to 19 is a pretty significant jump. Again, is that all Poe? No, there were other contributors there, but I do think he was a significant factor there, and that's one of the concerns we're going to have to see if the Falcons can, if some of these newcomers like McClain and Sanat can step up and replace him. Obviously, as I mentioned, McClain is probably going to be asked to fill the bulk of those shoes. I think we're going to see McClain get quite a bit of work in the base defense throughout the season and be our primary run defender in that regard. You know, that's where he makes his bones at. He can contribute somewhat as a pass rusher, but I don't expect Terrell McClain to, you know, he'll probably make a couple of plays and get a couple of pressures here and there, maybe get a sack or two. But I'm not really, when he's on the field, I'm not really expecting the Falcons pass rush to be this, you know, consistent force. I'll be looking at other guys to provide that in the base defense more so than anything. You know, you look at Dejan Sanat, obviously rookie, third round pick, has upside, but he's a rookie. And generally speaking, I don't tend to have high expectations for rookie D tackles because I think that's a position that generally has a little bit longer of a developmental time than I think a lot of people perceive. I think, you know, to a certain extent, I think we've been a little bit spoiled by Grady Jarrett and how quickly he was able to impact as a rookie, even though he had a limited workload. And we saw him show that growth, you know, in 2016 and 2017 and to be at the point where he is. And I think, you know, part of the reason why I sort of, when we drafted Sanat and there was so many people, you know, like, oh, he's like Grady Jarrett. I think part of the reason I was pushing back against that is because I think it skews people's perception to think that, oh, he's going to develop a lot like Grady Jarrett is. And 2 or 3 years from now, he's going to be really, just really talented D-tack. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on that. But, you know, I think if Sanat does come in and have a really good camp, I think I certainly can raise my expectations about, you know, how quickly he can contribute. If he winds up just being okay in training camp, the positive is I don't really have to lower my expectations because they're not particularly high right now. You know, looking at the Pro Football Focus grades, you know, there have been 46 rookies along the interior defensive line that have played at least 25% of their respective team snaps over the past 3 seasons. And you look at those 46 guys, only 16 of them finished with positive grades versus the run. And nearly half of those 16, of those guys were taken in the first 2 rounds of their respective drafts. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, Pro Football Focus grades are the end-all, be-all of measuring impact and whatnot. But those numbers suggest that, like, a third-round pick like Dejan Sanat has about a 20% chance of having a positive impact against the run this year. And, you know, that's a big enough number that I think it does give you some hope that he can be a positive contributor, but probably not big enough to have this overwhelming optimism that he's going to have this really strong season. So that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, I'm very curious to see how Dejan Sanat looks in camp. I think there's a lot of potential with him, but I'm not necessarily going to hold my breath that he's going to immediately hit the ground running coming into camp. You know, we talked about this already a little bit, but, you know, one of the other interesting things I'll be very curious to see what the Falcons do during training camp is how they divvy up the snaps with this rotation. And that's something that we've talked quite a bit about on this podcast over the last 2 months since the acquisitions of guys like Sanat and McClain to try to figure out how the Falcons are going to run this rotation. And, you know, as I've outlined earlier, I do think McClain and Sanat are more going to be base defense guys, while Jarrett, Crawford, and occasionally Selby will be in the mix in those nickel sub packages. I do think we will see McClain and Sanat get some nickel snaps, while we probably won't see very much of Crawford in the base. And when Selby plays in the base, he'll be more of an end. If we do see Crawford in the base, I think it will probably be more as an end than it will be as an interior D tackle. So we'll see guys, you know, dabble across the board. You know, I think I've said this, I'm sure I've said this on a previous episode. My expectation with how the Falcons are going to deal with their, particularly their base defense rotation, is I think early in the season and throughout training camp, my expectation is they will prepare for what is going to happen early in the season, which is that McClain and Jarrett is going to take the bulk of the base snaps early this year, and with the hope that Jarrett is basically keeping the spot warm for Sanat, so that he can eventually take over and let Jarrett be more of a pass rusher than a full-time every down guy that sort of can keep him fresh. So I think, you know, at least early in the season, the expectation is Jarrett's going to be his same role from last year. McClain is going to be more of that Poe guy. And again, Sanat's going to be more of the Ataba Rubin as that third guy that gets in the mix as well. And I think whether, you know, it's in week four or week 10 or whatever, you know, eventually the Falcons are probably hoping that Sanat is going to be able to put more on his plate and take some off of Grady Jarrett's as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see how the team handles that in training camp and what they do to sort of facilitate that, or if they have a different plan and a different strategy. Because again, one of the things that we talked about in some of those recent episodes in the post Terrell McClain signing is, you know, it's a little bit of an open question. You know, what I've just outlined is my best guess for how the Falcons will handle it. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is, and I've said it a number of times on this podcast over the years, is whatever the Falcons D-line rotation is in September often is not going to be the D-line rotation in December. You know, Dan Quinn pretty consistently has sort of, not to say that he's throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, but they basically play it out over the course of the season. And so it's always a work in progress with this D-line rotation. And then, you know, at times that can be frustrating, particularly early in the season, as I mentioned early with sort of how Selby seemed to be a little bit misused his first year here. But it has generally led to the Falcons playing much better up front down the stretches of all three seasons that Dan Quinn has been here. So there certainly is a relatively high level of trust that, even though it may not seem perfect, they always do find a way to figure it out. And if, you know, if you've got your defensive line playing, you know, some of its best football down the stretch, you know, who am I to sit here and complain about that, the methodology of Dan Quinn? So it is one of those things where I'll be curious to see how it works out in training camp and see how the Falcons start their D-line rotation. But I'm pretty confident that by the time we get to December, whether that's due to injuries or guys stepping up or guys stepping down or whatever, you know, we'll have a different mix. And I'm reasonably confident, if not very confident, that by the time we get to that point, you know, things will be chugging along quite nicely. You know, we'll have the best version of this Falcons D-line. Again, whether that's, you know, a great D-line compared to other teams, we'll have to see. But certainly, I think the best version of the Falcons D-line should be in place by, you know, Thanksgiving, December time. So we got a little bit more to discuss. I want to talk about some of these other young guys also competing in training camp for roster spots and practice squad spots. But I do want to plug the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are in a free agent frenzy, and whether you want to check out the Hawks, Locked On Hawks with Brad Rowland, or you have another NBA show, I'm sure there are many new Laker fans out there and maybe some anti-Warriors fans out there. So check out the Locked On Podcast Network, your NBA team every day. So, you know, we'll wrap this thing up talking about some of the battles for depth. I don't have a ton to say about these guys. You have Grierson Smith, Justin Zimmer, John Cunningham, and Jacob Tuaudi-Marinier. You know, I think looking back at what Garrison Smith did with Seattle last year in limited reps, I thought he looked pretty solid, you know, as a like fourth D tackle that can give you some, you know, 10, 15 decent snaps a game. You know, Justin Zimmer's very athletic. We'll sort of see if that athleticism can sort of translate into something this summer. John Cunningham's a player that I've talked about quite a bit in previous episodes talking about the undrafted free agents, and he's one of the guys that I'm a little bit higher on among this undrafted class. Jacob Tuohy Mariner, you know, I think is a little bit more of a question mark, but you never know. He could certainly be a surprising candidate there, playing, you know, sort of being used in that same sort of Derek Shelby role, which is probably an end in base downs, but potentially an interior rusher in nickel situations. You know, I think the key with these guys in particular is going to be you have so many Falcon players entering contract years. You know, Jarrett's obviously in a contract year, although we expect him to get an extension. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Derek Shelby, contract year. Tyrone McClain, contract year. And, you know, the Falcons could pretty much get out of Jack Crawford's contract pretty easily next year, next offseason as well. And so I think the hope is among these four young guys competing for backup spots, one of these guys will eventually emerge and be maybe a solid piece that can sort of at least bolster the Falcons' depth for the future and be a contributor. You know, like this year, looking at the snaps, you know, the hierarchy of snaps, you probably think Jarrett's one, Crawford's two, McClain is three, and Sanat is four. You know, with Sanat being that fourth guy this year, there's a pretty good chance that Sanat will move up at least one spot on that hierarchy in 2019. And one hopes that one of these guys, whether it's Garrison Smith or Zimmer or whoever, can sort of play at a high enough level where you can be reasonably confident that in 2019, that guy could replace Sanat as the fourth guy in the D-tackle rotation. Now, I think looking at overall with this D-tackle group, it is a work in progress, as I said at the top of the episode, where I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think, you know, speaking of Grady Jarrett getting paid, I do think, though, you know, at some point in the next 6 months, we're going to see him get a lot of money. You know, at what point he gets paid, who knows? And similarly to what I said about Jake Matthews, it doesn't really matter when it is, just matter that it just gets done, you know, before next March. And, you know, looking at his contract situation, my expectation is he'll probably get a deal somewhere in the 12 to 16 million range. You know, at the upper end of that spectrum, that makes him one of the top five highest paid interior defensive linemen in the league. At the lower end, it still puts him in the top 10 or 12. You know, it doesn't really matter to me one bit where he falls on that spectrum. You know, while I don't personally sort of see Grady Jarrett right now as one of the five best interior defensive line guys on the par with Fletcher Cox, on, you know, one day you think Aaron Donald will be in that list as well if the Rams decide to get their heads out of their butts. But I certainly think he's in the top 12. So if he gets a slight bump as far as price goes and gets paid like a top five guy, I'm not going to necessarily complain about that. I think, you know, talking about the D-tackle group being a work in progress, we know Jarrett's probably going to be here long-term, 99% confident that's going to happen. We know Sanat's going to be a long-term piece as well, given where we drafted him. But, you know, as I said in my scouting report, I'm not as convinced that Deidre Sanat's going to turn into this every down difference maker at D-tackle long-term for the Falcons. I see him more as a rotational guy that thrives against the run and can certainly give you positive reps against the pass, especially considering the type of player that he is, which is more of those, quote, as Jamie Dukes might call him, a power pig. But I think if he winds up being, you know, based off of my assessment of him as a player, as a pass rusher, if he winds up being your fourth best pass rusher, then you probably don't have a great pass rush. But at the same time, you know, I could certainly have misevaluated his upside potential as a pass rusher simply due to the fact that at USF, he wasn't necessarily asked to sort of pin his ears back and get after the quarterback on a consistent basis. When he did, he was effective at it, but you do wonder if that's from playing at a lesser level of competition and whether or not he's going to be able to mesh that with the NFL, where he's going to be facing guys like, you know, Joe Batonio and whatnot and Zeitler and whoever else that he's going to face, whether that's going to be as effective. And I think over time that could be, you know, not to rehash my entire scouting report. Go check that one out if you want to. But we'll sort of see. And I think, you know, certainly Dan Quinn and Bryant Young, you know, at least, you know, one of the things I've said controversially on this podcast in recent months was that I don't know if Dan Quinn's done a great job developing players, but I do think Grady Jarrett is one of the players that they have truly developed, without a doubt. And one hopes that maybe they can do the same for Deidre Sanat. So while I'm not as sort of high on Deidre Sanat as others seem to be, I do think he's a good player, and I think there is, you know, some potential there for him to become better than what I evaluated him as. And I think we'll see. You know, I think looking at this group, you have Sanat, you have Jarrett, and then I think you have a bunch of stopgaps. And I think we'll see if whether guys like McLean and Crawford in particular, and maybe some of these other young guys, if any of these guys show that they're more than that, if they're capable of being, you know, reliable pieces in 2018 as well as beyond. And, you know, I feel like, you know, to wrap this thing up, I feel like looking at this 2018 D-line group, it seems like it's just going to be the Grady Jarrett show. And while I think Grady Jarrett is certainly capable enough to carry this unit, I don't necessarily know if it's fair to really ask him to do that. And I want to see if anybody else sort of steps up and becomes those reliable contributors. You know, not expecting anybody to be world beaters, but I want capable contributors in the same way that guys like Brooks Reed and Derek Shelby were last year. You know, that they do their role and they do it, you know, fine. You don't have to necessarily get 8 sacks, or you don't have to necessarily get 5 tackles for loss, or whatever the case may be, but just be a solid contributor in whatever capacity the Falcons ask you to be this year. And that's going to be sort of the question for me with this D tackle group. And we'll see whether some of these issues get answered in training camp. We'll see if we have to wait till the regular season. We have to see if we got to wait till December or January for any of these things to come to fruition. So that's it, guys, on the D tackle group. You know, be excited about Grady Jarrett. I think you probably be quasi skeptical, you know, at least have a little bit more of a skeptical eye, critical eye towards some of these other guys, but we'll see how they work out. Yeah. So that's it, guys. We'll be back tomorrow talking New Orleans Saints in their season preview. We'll come back on Monday with the Edge Group and continue along with the AFC North previews, just so you know, we don't talk about AFC teams very much on this podcast, as I've said in previous episodes. And so it's nice to get a little overview of a team that we literally haven't played in 4 years and see where those teams are at. And in addition to wrapping up the defense next week as well, and that should get us, or wrapping up most of the defense next week, and then that should get us to at least the week of training camp starting, if my math is not off. Probably is again. Yeah, and that should get us, and then, you know, we might throw in some fan talks, probably a little closer to camp, just trying to churn out this content to get you guys prepped, and then we can start to get back into the fan talks in the middle of the month, later portion of the month, since we'll be on the eve of training camp, and get some of your guys' insights. And speaking of fan talks, if you want to let me know when you want to be on an episode talking with me about the Falcons or whatever subjects that you want to talk about on this podcast, I'm open. You know, it is July. There's not a whole lot to be talking about other than listening to me for 30 minutes talking about, you know, third string D tackles. You can do so by emailing me at lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at FalcFans. Podcast Twitter handle is Locked On Falcons. You can also check us out on Facebook, Locked On Falcons. And the two websites that this podcast is posted daily, which again is lockedonfalcons.com and falcfans.com. You can leave a comment on either one of those sites to provide your feedback or ask questions and whatnot. So that's what's on deck in the coming days and weeks, guys, churning out this content so that, you know, during this month of July, don't ever act like I never gave you guys anything, because, you know, we're truly in the dead time of the summer when it comes to football, and only folks like me are churning out daily locked on content, you know. So you guys should appreciate me. I you know, just stroke my ego just a little bit. I just need it, you know? Anyway, all right, I'm done. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.